This time on the show, you only have a split second.
Ubapo breeds creativity.
And every moment is the moment of truth. All this and more on Comics Are Great. It's Comics Are Great, the visual storytelling show, recorded live every other Wednesday at the Ann Arbor District Library in lovely downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan. Comics.aadl.org. And this is the show where we talk with cartoonists, people in the comics field, in the comics industry, about making comics, about the lifestyle of the cartoonist, about publishing, self-publishing, all sorts of things that surround this medium that drives us all mad. My name is Jersey Droz, cartoonist and teaching artist, and with me today is one of, well, what I consider to be one of the most important cartoonists working in the industry today, Mr. Tin Pham.
Hey, everybody.
Tin Pham, Cobra Talon on the Twitters.
On the Twitters.
My first question for, let's just say you're the author of a book called Sumo from First Second, mm-hmm. and you drew Level Up with Gene Yang, mm-hmm. no small shakes in the comics world. But my first question for you, as we talk, we're going to talk about Sumo, we're going to talk about this whole idea of every moment is the moment of truth.
Uh-huh.
We're going to talk about doing solo work and mini comics. I want to talk about mini comics.
Yeah.
But as I was, doing the show prep for this, you're a hard man to track down on the internet. I had a hard time finding, I found your blog spot, which hadn't been updated since 2011, unless it's password protected or something.
2011 is a big year. That's so much time back then.
But I'm not, I had a hard time tracking it down as far as a definitive Tin Pham web presence. So if I missed it, let me know what it is.
Really, there is really no Tin Pham web presence. The terrible thing about the blog is that if you fall behind on your blog, it's super hard to catch up again. Because, I've fallen behind 2011. I was drawing comics and I didn't really update it. But now I feel like if I want to start using that blog again, I got to update. I got to put up so much stuff. So much backlog of stuff that I just never want to do it. So I also have a new Tumblr account that I'm going to start putting up a new comic that I've been working on. Oh. So I haven't really made it public yet, but if people want to go to it, I guess they can check it out. It's called, it's just pleasedon'tgiveup.com.
Don'tgiveup.com. That's your Tumblr. Cool. Comic by Tin Pham. 5 pages every Monday. Self-published mini comic version available October 2013. Oh my gosh, it's a scoop.
Yeah, that's a scoop. This is the first time I've ever talked about it. And I haven't. So this coming Monday is the first time I'm going to be posting the first 5 pages of the thing. And then every Monday after that, I'm going to have 5 pages up.
My gosh, so exciting. Please don't give up.
That's the first time. Actually, this is the first time anyone ever knows about it. So. That's pretty, it's cool.
I appreciate that. All right. You broke here on comicsaregreat.tv, everybody. So I want to go in. So you're a cartoonist. You're a high school teacher too.
Yes. Yes.
So what grades are you teaching?
I teach all grades from 9 to 10, from 9 to 12. I'm actually, at school right now. I don't have any classes. I don't have a class today till later on the day. I have 2 free periods in a row. But I teach at a school called Bishop O'Dowd High School in Oakland, California. And I actually teach with Gene Yang. Gene actually got me the job 10 years ago. He's a computer science teacher here at Bishop O'Dowd. And he got me the job because we knew each other through comics. And he got me the job. And I've been working here for that long. And I really, people, when I first got this job, I was like, I'm going to take this job until I become famous in comics or famous in art. And after my first year, I really fell in love with teaching. And now if you were going to ask me if I were going to give up one profession, what I would give up, I for sure would say I'd give up any the other professions other than teaching because I really love teaching. It's my career. It's the way I want to, do for the rest of my life, So, I've really enjoyed it. I'm happy when I come to work every day. It's really fun, and plus, I guess it's fun because I also get to work with my best friends. Another art teacher here is another cartoonist, and Gene, of course, is here, and so we're constantly hanging out and talking and stuff like that. It's fun.
It's awesome when your day job can be something that you actually truly enjoy. It doesn't feel like work anymore, does it? Right. I just wrapped up an 8-week course that I teach quarterly in Ann Arbor, Graphic Novel Academy, and you know, there's something that's just so wonderful about going in with a plan, and the kids hack the class. They take you in some place you never expected to go, right? And then they create really interesting things right in front of you. There's few things that are as rewarding as that. And I mean, I know part of it, for me at least, is that I'm, you know, going through the whole thing where I'm watching a kid go through exactly what I went through when they're making comics for the first time. But also it's just that it's that unpredictability of working with young people. That's much fun, right?
Sometimes I get like, oh man, you know, this job is just, you know, it's the same. But then when something that you tell them like clicks and they're attentive and it's a really awesome feeling that like they are all listening to you, and you know, and a few of my students have gone on to do more art, you know, to do zines and to work in like animation and stuff like that. So it makes you feel really good that you have such an influence on kids. And even if they don't do art, you know, just that, you know, your influence and your that you're part of their lives in some way, in a good way.
Yeah.
A neat thing. It's kind of cheesy, but
once you've experienced it, you realize that schmaltziness that what's his name, the Mr. Smith Goes to Washington kind of feel of it is actually pretty true. It's like, yeah, I had a 19-year-old student, former student, come back to town and look me up, and first of all it's like, oh, how sweet, she looked up the old man. But then she says to me something. She's like, "It's like you said to me once," and she said this really smart thing. And I'm like, "Did I say that? That's pretty cool." Yeah. A, because I had a positive impact on her life, and B, because I said a smart thing once, and I get to hear it back.
Exactly. Did I really say that? I think you know the same thing I love about teaching is the reason I got into comics. I mean, I got into comics because I wanted to make something that would last beyond me. You know, I wanted to do art that after I die or whatever, that will still be existing in the world, you know, and still, you know, communicate to people. And now I also do that through kids.
Yeah.
You know, so after I die, these kids that that I taught also go on, and there's a little bit of me that I taught, you know, go on. So I love that.
Yeah, that is cool. So speaking of the book, let's talk about the second, Sumo, which published by First Second, came out in December, didn't it?
Yeah, it came out first.
And here's the plug I would give for the book. It's 1991. Or a little bit earlier, maybe 1990, I'm in high school, and I go to my local comic store, and like most 15-year-olds at that time, I was into Spider-Man, I was into whatever was going on in the Marvel Comics world at the time, and I found this really cool out-of-the-way bookstore where he had all these back issues in these long boxes, but in the back corner, he had a whole bunch of really out-of-the-way stuff like Epic Illustrated, like Kamiko books, Matt Wagner's Grendel, you know, Bill Willingham's Elementals, kind of stuff that you just didn't find in the spinner racks in the grocery stores back then. And I remember discovering people like Jim Starlin, Dean Modern, Ken Stacey, and Eddie Campbell. And this is something I said to Nick Abadzis about his work as well, who we'll talk about Nick Abadzis, how he was on, you do a show too. But I said to Nick, it's like that was the moment where I realized, oh, that's what comics can be. You know, it can be this fun, lighthearted superhero stuff, but it can also go into really interesting poetic places. Mm-hmm. And it was just like a veil just lifted. And it was like, oh, the medium is so much more vast and interesting than I ever thought it could be. That's the same feeling I got when I read Sumo. Honest and for true. Oh. This book, I'm serious, Tin. This is true comics poetry. And I advise anybody who loves the medium to read this book. And I want to talk about some of the ideas in this book. But
before we talk about Sumo really quick, I love that story that you just told, because I think everybody in our industry right now has a story like that. And I have a story just like that, where I got back from college and just like so into Image and into all the Jim Lee Marvel stuff. And one comic book guy you know, like the guy that worked there, he showed me Optic Nerve,
showed
me Chester Brown, and it literally blew my mind. I was just like, what is this? I mean, I could draw comics without having to do these things that, you know, I really don't want to draw, you know? And I was like, this was amazing to me. I remember the first time, and I was like, oh, man. And it was like discovering comics all over again, you know?
Yeah.
So I was devouring all these things, and I was reading good alternative stuff, bad alternative stuff, just like, and then I read Chunky Rice.
Oh, gosh, like, yeah.
This is like the most incredible thing in the world. It was just, yeah, ever since then, I never looked back, and I was just.
For a second there, Tin.
It's one that I'm always craving to discover, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it shows you a whole new way to even think about the medium. Goodbye Chunky Rice is a fantastic one. Adrian Tomine, Optic Nerve, awesome stuff. Yeah, it's like once you have that breakthrough moment, it makes you realize that there's whole new avenues you haven't even begun to unlock in this medium, right? But so let's lead into Sumo by talking about you are, you know, into mini comics, and you like this is how your inroad into comics was hanging out with a bunch of mini comics makers mm-hmm. in the Bay Area, right?
Yeah. So, I graduated college and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with my life. And I discovered all these comics. And so then the same comic shop owner was like, well, if you like all this stuff, you know, I pretty much ran out of things to read. I was just reading everything I could. And finally, he was like, well, you should check out these things called mini comics. I was like, what are those? And then he gave me some and I was reading them. I was like, I had never seen one of those things before. And I just couldn't believe that you could do that. I couldn't believe that you could do that. And so I did it. I decided to do my own. It's terrible. The first mini comics were just absolutely atrocious. And I had a friend that was like, hey, you know, there's a group of artists that meets in Oakland every week. Do you want to come and draw with them? I was like, okay, sure, I'll come and draw. And so I go and meet them, and it just so happens to be this thing called Art Night, which is a group of people that would meet at Jason Shiga's house. Jason Shiga does awesome comics. He does a comic called Meanwhile, which is amazing. And Empire State just came out. And we would meet at his house in Oakland, and we would just sit and draw. And at the time when I went there, it was Jason, Ben Catmull, who's an amazing comic book artist that does a book for Fantagraphics, Jin Yang, and Jason Thompson, and a couple other people. And I drew with them. And the neat thing about it, and this might sound bad, but when I met them, I was just like, these guys are geeks like me. You know, they're nothing fancy. You know, like when you're just reading people's comics, you think, oh man, these guys are going to be. And I realized, I'm just like, these guys aren't anything more special than anybody else, you know? And so that made me really comfortable. And I was able to just kind of hang out with them and draw with them and stuff like that. And I didn't feel very intimidated, and it was very welcoming. Everybody was very welcoming, which is kind of sad because I'm not as welcoming now. But when I met those guys, they were really welcoming and they were very supportive, you know. And so I think without them, I would never continue because I really did feel like my first book was pretty bad. And so I just continued doing these mini comics because everybody was doing mini comics at the time. Everybody, I think Gene and Shiga had just gotten the Zurich. And it was I remember going my first day going there and sitting in this huge chair made of boxes. And I was like, what is this huge chair made of boxes? What are in these boxes? And then Shiga said it was, it's boxes of double happiness, which
oh,
was
wow.
For. And I was like, so why are they here? And he's just like, well, you know, I made like 5,000 of them because that's how much they gave me money for. And no one's going to buy my stuff. Furniture made out of these boxes of comics, you know. And but minis were the way to go. And I was super into it. And then we went, they said, hey, you should go to a convention. And I went, my first convention was San Diego, like small press table, way back when nobody went. It was weird because like, it's weird to see it now because when I first started going like 10 years ago, there was hardly anybody there. And small press, they were like asking for people to be in small press. It was like, I remember it was like $100 for 4 days or something like that, you know?
Wow.
There, I met another really influential person. His name is Dylan Williams, who he later becomes a publisher for Spark Plug Comics. But he was super supportive, and he was, and you know, I think at the time when I was meeting with, I was just thinking my comic had to get slicker, had to be more like professional. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah, like higher production values on the illustration and in the final printed thing, right?
And Dylan was like, "No, I mean, all that is part of your art. I mean, what you and that's when it really opened my eyes that I didn't have to do all this kind of slick production value and that the you know messiness of what I did was part of my art and he really helped and." And then I never looked back and I did comics and I met more people and met more. And then just, you can see this community of mini comic artists, just all, and everybody, I remember nobody was making any money, not at all. So like if you weren't losing money, that was awesome, you know? And
yeah,
time, the dream was to get published by one of these publishers and not get paid for it just so that they would make a book, you know, and it would be in like a comic book store. Or in Diamond was a big thing. Oh, it's in Diamond. And I remember me and Gene Yang would have these long conversations where he would just be like, what are we doing? I mean, this is because Gene is a lot very practical. So he's like, we should just quit. I mean, we're losing money. I mean, I lost $200, you know, at this convention, you know?
Yeah.
You put all this money into going to conventions. And even back then, it wasn't that expensive, and you would still lose money. And you're like, "What are we doing?" But I told him, you know, at the time, I was like, "We're doing it just because we want to do it. It's not, you know, it's really for the love." At that time, it was all about the love. There was no money. There was no audience. There was, you know, if no one read my comic, I would have still made them. You know,
yeah.
So at that point, it was just about doing it for the love of doing it, and it was a very special time. I still think about it. And now, even though comics is a lot better, like the industry, you know, some of our people are getting paid and they're getting books out on the regular. I still have a nostalgia for those days where we were just doing it for the love and we're just sitting around stapling comics and stuff. Sumo was actually a mini comic, you know, like first. And everything. And then it got picked up and became a graphic novel. So that time wasn't that long ago. And I feel like maybe that time might be returning, you know, maybe this time it's not mini comics, but blogs or whatnot. But, you know, it's coming back, you know, I think.
Well, one of the themes of the book of Sumo is, it's expressed explicitly is every moment is the moment of truth. And when I think about mini comics, you know, I'm teaching a lot of kids and I hear time and time again that, you know, 14-year-old kid comes up to me like, I've got a 67 volume graphic novel series inside of me and it's going to be just like Bleach. It's going to go on and on. It's going to be like One Piece. It'll be 75 volumes. And I say, well, that's great. But maybe you should start with a mini comic first because a 67 volume graphic novel is a lot of opportunities to feel the misery and the despair of not being able to finish. Whereas a mini comic, it's like it's quick and dirty, done in one. You get that emotional high of just finishing something quick. And I'm wondering if like that's, you know, if there's like a parallel there between this idea of like when you do. Well, we got Mini Comics Day coming up in Ann Arbor here in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's it really is like every moment is the moment of truth. Can I get through this 8-page thing in one sitting? Right.
Well, you know, that's how I approach my art as well. And I kind of approach my life in that way, which is good and bad. You know, when I worked with Gene, it was on Level Up. It was super hard because Gene is a very pragmatic. I don't know if that's the right word. Pragmatic artist. He plans everything out. He writes a full script. Then he does full thumbnails. Then he does pencils in which he, you know, he flips the page over backwards to make sure all the proportions are right.
Wow.
Then he inks it. And then he, you know, he'll ask people for their opinion, all that stuff. And for me, when I draw in comics, I just draw it. I just, and then I'm done. I don't labor over it as much And people have asked me, like, my art, you can tell if you look at a page of my art, is a lot sloppier and a lot more, just has this kind of unfinished feeling to it. And I've always wondered why I couldn't work the other way. And one of the reasons I give people now is that basically what it is that I'm trying to put down what's in my brain onto the page as fast as I can. Because I feel like the more you put between that, like pencils and, like thumbnails and pencils and revisions and stuff like that, it changes what you had initially in your head.
Yeah. Hey, Matt, I'm wondering if we could pull up the trailer for Sumo. We can watch it while Tin and I talk about it a little bit. Because this is an interesting idea that you're talking about. As I was reading the book, I'm thinking this is a metaphor for the creative life is what this is. This is like saying yes to the future and not over preparing for it and letting the past be the past. There's all these scenes in the book about, aim for the center. You don't get time to think about this. Just strike, well, right?
When I went to see a sumo match, I'm a little bit of a backstory. This is the third version of sumo that you're holding in your hand. Like, I had done a whole 80-page sumo story that then I scrapped, and then started over, and then scrapped again, and then this is like the third version. And one of the big reasons is that my first version of sumo was kind of like a story that you would expect from a person that doesn't know very much about sumo, and kind of into the whole like big guys battling aspect of it, Then I went to see a sumo match, and it changed, it blew my mind and changed my life. I mean, sumo, the way that sumo is done is very, I can relate it back to being an artist and just being in life itself, is that, it's when you're on, you prepare for it all this, your life, you practice and you practice and you sketch and all that. But when you get down to it, when you get down to the match, you just have to do it. There's no like, I don't know. There's no hesitation really. It's just, if you are hesitate, then you've already kind of lost, you have to decide what it is you're going to do and then do it. And that's what really made me worry. And I was like, wow, this is how I want to tell the story, it was just an really eye-opening experience. And so, yeah, I mean, people don't have to approach art or life the way I do. Cause I do the moment thing a lot more than normal people would do. But it's just the only way that I can work. Like if I do what Gene does, I'll never get anything done. It's just too much. Now at 38, I found that that's about me, and that's I've accepted that, and that's, I'm trying to make it work for me.
Well, it's a lovely message in the book, I think, for even if you're not a cartoonist, this idea that, life doesn't give you a whole lot of opportunities to go, oh, wait a minute, do over. can I try that again with more feeling, right? It's like there's plenty of times where you either, you find out what you're made of and you don't get a second chance to think about it. But another thing that you just pointed out that I think is really interesting is this idea of, again, speaking as a teacher, you have to break things into a procedure a lot. And I tried to make it clear to my students that this is an arbitrary procedure. This is not the order in which you create something, but I got to break it down into an 8-week course somehow. So there's, you do this now, but you're probably going to come back to it later and touch on it. So you mentioned that sumo started out as a mini comic, and it was black and white too. I want to talk about color in a little bit. And it started with a dream, if I'm not mistaken, right?
So I keep a sketchbook next to my bed because I never remember my dreams. And so once in a while, if I do wake up and I remember my dreams, I'll sketch it so that I'll think about it next time. And I did I have the page still, but basically I had a dream about myself as a sumo wrestler floating in the sky with fishes. No, at the time, I didn't know what it was. But now looking back at it, I think it's basically just like me stressing out about being fat. And so.
Oh, funny.
But then I looked at it and I was like, whoa, this is super awesome. So I was like, I want to do a sumo comic. And it took me a long time. I mean, it took me at least like 6 years to actually finish the first version. And that's because I kept starting over. And the neat thing, and here I'm going to do a little advertising too. My favorite thing about being a cartoonist is not being a cartoonist, is being a part-time cartoonist. You know, the best thing that I ever chose in my life was to become a teacher and to do comics on the side. Because what it allowed me to do was allow me to do my art at my own pace and at my own, you know, whenever I wanted. And so people ask me sometimes, why did sumo take you so long to do? And my answer is, well, because I could take a long time. So I did, you know, because I wanted to come, you know, I'm not an artist that has many stories, you know. You know, Gene has millions of ideas that he's just waiting to do. My wife, Lark, has tons of ideas that she's waiting to do. I don't. You know, I have I think I was telling someone I might have 3 books in me. My whole life. I have an idea of something I want to do. I really want to do it. You know, I really want it. I not necessarily write, but I want it to come out the way I envision it. So it took me a long time to do. I'm a little off now. Okay, so finally I did it. And I wanted to self-publish it because I really love the mini aspect of it, but it was really big. It was 80 pages, which is not something that you could just fold in half and staple. You know, 80 pages is a big chunk. So I got the stupid idea to do a Japanese stab bind on it, basically binding by hand with needles and thread. And I silkscreened the covers and printed it all out. And I found that it took me, at first I was like, I was taking it to this comic book convention called Ape. And at first I was like, oh man, I'm going to do only 200 limited edition signed copies because it's going to take me a long time. And I was working on it. And then I was like, oh man, I'm only going to do 100 limited. And I was like, oh man, guess 50 limited edition. Only 50 of the actual mini comic floating around. And when I took it to Ape, I was going to sell it for $15. And I was like, no one's going to buy a mini comic for $15. That's ridiculous. But I think people like can recognize the work that I put into it. And it sold out. And luckily, one of the people that bought it is from First Second. And they liked it. And Gina, I think, bought it. And I guess she passed it to Callista and stuff. And they liked it.
And so
they published it.
Was Callista the editor on this book?
Callista's the, I mean, I say this at different places, but you know, Calista is an amazing editor, and I always think that this book should have both our names on the cover, you know, because as much as when I did the mini comics, it was as much, you know, is exactly what I wanted as a mini comic. Calista really helped to make this comic from a mini comic that was very personal to me to a mini to a comic that was not only personal to me but also relatable to everybody. She was able to say, okay, Tin, I know this is good for you and for the people that you know, but if you wanted to have a wider audience to see, you know, understand this and feel this, then you have to do this and this. And and it was great. I mean, it wasn't without, you know, we had some little minor battles and stuff like that. But
as you should over a creative project, right?
But she was amazing. And at first I was like, oh, man, this girl's super young. I mean, she's like, I think she's like 22. I don't know how old she is. But, you know, and I'm just like, what is this 22-year-old going to tell me about my comic? And but she was awesome. It was amazing. It was I never want to work with another editor. I think she's like the best editor out there.
Well, that's a great plug. She's our guest on the next episode. So everybody tune in 2 weeks for Calista Brill is going to be on Comics Are Great to talk about what an editor does. But roping back to the original idea here, There's a chicken and egg thing with plot versus message, right? It's like, okay, what do I introduce into the plot to make stuff happen in the story to get to the point? And what's the point? And so I'm curious, these themes of, right, you know, every moment is the moment of truth, letting the past be the past, that's a big part of the story as well. Were these there at the outset when you said, I'm going to do a comic about sumo wrestlers? Or was it something you discovered as you were making the book? Or is it something that kind of changed and morphed over time? I mean, how often are you going back to say, well, maybe this is the message, or maybe this plot element would be good for the message, and then you find a whole new message? I'm curious about like how that process works for you.
Well, for me, it's a little different than some people. I don't write full scripts, and I don't have thumbnails, like I was saying.
Yeah. So
I just start drawing, and then however the story develops is how the story develops. So if you guys follow this Tumblr account that I'm doing, that's how it's going to happen, is that I have an idea, and I have kind of like what I want to do, and I'm just going to draw it, and I hope that it will click.
Yeah.
Things will come together, and that's how sumo was. I just drew it, and things just started to click, and things click. Things happen because of my life, you know. I mean, it's hard to disguise, but basically, all of my comics are basically about me, you know, about what I'm going through, and it might be about sumo wrestling. So it's like me as a sumo wrestler, yeah. And I did this mini comic about a sushi chef, but it's really about what I was going through, but put onto a sushi chef. It's right. Sort of like role playing almost, where you just take what you're going through and put it on a fictional character. But at the time that I was doing it, like, for example, you know, I was living, you know, I graduated art school and I went to live with my parents because that's what you do when you graduate art school. And in the span of about, I lived with them for about a year, and in a span of about a month, what had happened was I'd gotten a job at Bishop O'Dowd. I had gotten a girlfriend that I wanted to, move in with. I was going to move to Oakland. You know, I'd lived in Campbell, California all my life. I was going to move to a whole new town, a whole new city. And so all those changes were happening. And I am not a guy that loves change. I hate change. If I didn't have to change anything in my life forever, that would be the awesomest thing in the world. So it was super tough on me. It was really hard. And that I was making this move. And so that's what came into like the past and the whole, you know, part of the book about him, you know, leaving the United States to go to Japan to be a sumo wrestler is all coming from that moment in my life. And then, you know, the other things like, you know, every moment is actually things that people have said to me. You know, the whole bar scene in the book is actually true. I mean, I do have a friend who's a bartender. His name is Kenny. And, you know, and all that is pretty much true, except for I wasn't a sumo wrestler and I wasn't going to go to Japan. I was just going to go to Oakland. The guy that was in the book that's kind of not a drunk, but he's at the bar a lot. He did say to me once, you know, don't worry about this being the moment of truth, because every moment is the moment of truth. Wow. And then I was like, as soon as he said that, I was like, rush home, write it down, you know. It changes and morphs. And then sometimes I'll like, oh man, I got a great idea for sumo. And I'll totally forget it, you know. And so it's just really, for me, the way I work is super organic. I never really know how a comic's going to end until it ends, you know. Mm-hmm. And for me to do it by myself, it was great. But when I did that type of, I applied that aesthetic to working with Gene, it was like nerve-wracking for Gene, you know, because he would be like, did you read the script? Did you like it? And I'll say, I didn't read the script. And he's like, but you're already drawing it. Why didn't you read the script? One page at a time, you know. So when I was drawing, and I think it helps when I do that, because when I'm drawing it, I don't, you know, I don't spoil anything, because I really don't know myself. You know, I'm just drawing it as it comes. And I found that that's the only way I can work. So that's how I work. So every story is going to be super organic. I think it's going to be an interesting experiment with this blog that I'm doing, is because my stories are so like that. I don't print anything until it actually finishes. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is how it is. you know. But with the blog, I'm posting up 5 pages every week. So, you know, how it changes and stuff like that. And ready to witness as opposed to just me looking at it, you know.
So, if it sounds like what you're talking about here is having a sense of faith in your own ability to execute on something. Not like a blind faith of it's going to be awesome and I just know it is, but having a sense of I'll figure it out, right?
Yeah. It, like I said, it has I am a very confident person, so I definitely think whatever I do is going to be amazing. How amazing is up in the air, but I always think it's going to be amazing. And it also has to do with the fact, you know, I don't depend on this to make a living. You know, I do it because I love it and because it's fun and it's fun to get. And so if you know, I do this story and nobody likes it, it's the stupidest story in the world, it doesn't matter. You know, I did it. It was fun. I did it for the love of it and whatnot. Now, if I was a professional cartoonist, I'd be a lot more wary. You know, I'd be more like, oh, man, is this good enough? Will this get me another book? Will I sell this book? Whatever, you know. But because I don't, I can kind of just do what I want. I think that's like my favorite thing about being a part-time cartoonist.
That's a really, really cool way of looking at it. You know, and I love the fact that you've modeled this idea that Raina Telgemeier's talked about this before, that her process is entirely intuitive. And I think our creative people, myself included, love to concoct the story of that I had this thing locked before I put pencil to paper. I prevented any future calamity. And I went through this. I did a graphic novel much in the style of Gene Yang where I wrote the entire thing out in thumbnail form. You know, spent 2 years doing that before I finally drew the pages. I still got to the point when I was doing the final pages where I was like, oh, you know what? I've completely forgot. I didn't address this point. I got to write in a new scene. I wrote in 2 new scenes because I didn't anticipate that 2 years before. You know, so you can't protect yourself from the future, but we like to think that we can, you know. And I think that people like you and like Raina, who can model this idea of, like, you know, there is also just doing it, just getting in there and making.
Raina talk about her mini comics past too.
What's that? Oh, Raina.
Yeah, did she talk about her mini comics past?
We haven't talked about her mini comics on the show. I'm gonna have to have her back to actually talk about those days.
Seeing her at a convention selling her mini comics for $1, and I remember telling Raina, like, man. You can't sell these comics for $1. You're just really, you know, undercutting yourself. And then I think flash forward, like, you know, 9 years later, and I'm asking Raina for like contract advice.
Oh, man. I want to talk, you know, you talk about this kind of intuiting the process, but the book Sumo is not without some kind of creative scaffolding in here, in the sense that it's told in a nonlinear fashion. You jump from the past to the, and as a matter of fact, I'm going to put it on the comics cam here. Let me get some stuff out of the way so I can show people what the book looks like.
Cam.
Yeah, we've got like an overhead cam where I can actually show what the book looks like to people on watching on the air. So it's told in different time periods. So like in the present, it's an orange color scheme. When you go into the past, it gets progressively cooler. Like in the deep past, it's like a cool blue. But then in the not too distant past, if I can find it, it's green, which we'll talk about in a second. But the flashbacks get progressively shorter. Like the jumping around sequences get progressively shorter. And I heard you mention something about Ubapo comics, which we've talked about on the Comics Are Great show in the past, actually episode 23, where we're talking with Matt Madden, who is a big proponent of Ubapo comics.
I learned from this is the precipice. He had a panel, I forgot which Comic-Con, about Ubapo comics. And that's what that was the thing that kickstarted the third version of Sumo. So, you know, I did the first one. I didn't like it. Went to a Sumo match, did a second version. I went with Matt Madden about Ubapo comics. And then I was like, F the second story. And I got rid of the second story and started the third one. And he had really changed the way I looked at comics, because I was like, whoa, I guess I could do these neat creative things. I'm a huge fan of Steven Soderbergh at the time. You know, I had seen him, was the movie that I really loved. Like, you know, like all his movies are very nonlinear, mm-hmm. you know, And I love how they would all come together sort of at the end, you know, and I always thought that was super amazing. With this comic, when Matt talked about that, I was like, oh, this is, and at the time I was also searching for a way to pace the story so that it would be like a sumo match.
Oh.
Reason that, you know, the flashbacks get smaller and smaller and smaller into this like really fast climaxes, because that's how sumo matches are. They're slow and very traditional and drawn out, and then they get on the thing and then bam, it's over, you know. And that's how I wanted people to read it, how it felt, you know. So then when Matt talked about this, I was like, oh, that's a great idea. And what's interesting was I had set it all up and I had done it, and I finally got it to work for my mini comic. And then when I got the deal with for a second, Calista was like, well, you know, this story is only 80 pages long. We're going to need to add like 20 or so pages. And when I was on the phone with her, I was like, yeah, sure, I can do it. Contract. You know, I was afraid that if I didn't sign a contract right away, she'd take it away from me. So then I sat down and did it. And I realized, oh, my God, you know, because of the stupid old Bapple thing that I set up, if 20 pages to the comic, I have to add 20 pages to each section. Equally. So I couldn't just throw 20 pages at the end or throw 20 pages in the beginning. I had to put 2 pages here, 2 pages here, 2 pages here, 2 pages here.
Oh, wow.
That took a lot longer to plan an extra 20 pages than to, but it worked out and it's awesome. And I think that's one of the strongest things. When people read it, some people don't even notice that.
Right, right. Yeah, I was aware that it was that the pacing was changing, but I didn't realize that it was informed by we should explain what Ubapo comics are, because it's a creative restriction to put on yourself based on poetry, right?
Yeah, I really didn't really understand the whole thing first, but I read a comic by David Lasky, and it was a comic where every panel, the narration would start with the letter of the alphabet. So the first panel, it'd start with A, and then the second would start with a B. And it was beyond the fact that it did that, it was also an amazing comic. So I was really interested in making an amazing comic that followed it, like had a little old Apple theme to it, that, you know, so I was very excited to do it. It's one of the things that made me excited to do sumo, was to try to figure this out. And yeah, so that's how I went about.
So, but I love about this idea is that you know, we're talking about intuiting a story, but also creating an art. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the Ubapo thing is a bit of an artificial restriction to put on yourself. But it's sort of like hemming yourself in to try to figure out how to get out, and that's when you start creating really interesting things, right?
It's neat to do that. This in particular was because sometimes as a cartoonist or an artist, you can go on for a long time. And with this, there's certain pages where I had to be like, I just got to take this down to the bare minimum. I only got 4 pages to tell this part of the story. And so I can't tell this part. I mean, this is not needed. This is not needed. Okay, this is it. So you boil it down to like the essential thing. And that's what I love about it. Sometimes, you know, people ask me why, like, one of the criticisms of sumo, and a caveat to this is that, you know, I read the criticisms of sumo all the time, whether they're praise or criticism, and I love them all. I mean, there's not any time where I'm just like, oh man, this guy didn't understand, I hate this guy. I really love hearing what people say about it, how they feel about it and stuff. But one of the criticisms that I've seen is that it's too short. You know, like, oh, it's just too short. I finished it in 20 minutes. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that some people that normally read novels and stuff like that just aren't used to reading comics. You know, like there's a lot more going on in a graphic novel than just the words. If you're just reading a comic and just reading the words and then just flipping the pages as soon as you read the words, you're going to miss out a lot about what's going on in comics. You know, like every picture is telling a story, and every gutter is telling a story that the pictures are not telling, and the structure of the book and how they put this and why this shot was a long shot and why this shot is a medium shot and why you're doing this angle plus this angle. And all that is like super important to reading a comic. And so I always feel like a comic, and you can tell when comics are in the literary world now that, you know, the New York publishers are like, well, this comic is too short. We need a comic that's 700 pages.
Yeah.
So all these graphic novels are getting ginormous. I mean, Habibi is like, what, 900 pages? As much as I love Craig Thompson, I'm not reading 900 pages of comics.
It's like a weapons grade graphic novel.
Graphic novel reader, it would take me forever because not only am I looking at the words, now I'm looking at every little part. Craig Thompson draws amazing details, and I got to look at all the details and the flow and the shots and all that. Every page would take me like 30 minutes to read. That book would take me 4 years to read, you know? I'm not reading, you know, and as great as Sailor Twain is, it's like 900 pages. Every book that seems to be getting published by New York publishers are so big. And I feel like people are like, well, that's how long novels are. So that's how long graphic novels should be. And it's like, it's not the same thing. You know what I mean?
Comics have a density to them, don't they? Like a distillation.
Yeah, but you know, I love what anybody gets out of Sumo. So I think it's a neat thing. But
I got on the Comics Cam here a panel from the story. It's from page 85 of the book. I'm wondering if you can pull it up. I don't know how well this is showing up on the screen, but like this is the bottom panel, the last panel of page 85. And wow. Scott is looking, he's getting ready for the match, or the match is underway actually. And he looks out into the audience and his friend is in the audience. And you did this lovely thing where everything is just washed in orange. And the only two light things in the panel are the girl and Scott's shoulder, this like rim light on his shoulder. That's a storytelling moment that made that moment hang. The panels are all the same size,
yeah.
Right? And so, like, in some of the earlier panels, as we could see on the camera, are like fast moments, like you know, slapping down, ramming into the guy. But that last moment hangs because of that framing that you did, and that's a narrative device. You wrote with color right there, right? So,
yeah. A lot of times, you know, when you do things like that, because you've drawn comics for so long, you don't think about it. That's just what you do, you know. And it's neat to I when I read comics, I love, you know, I love how people get you to feel certain things with a combinations of words and pictures, you know. Yeah. Sometimes, like my one criticism I always make fun of Gene for is I always feel like he has too many words in his comics, especially in Level Up. I was always getting mad at him because I, you know, there would be so many words on a panel, my drawing would only be like this big. And I'd be like, there's so many words. Why do we need this many words? I can just draw what you're describing. And I feel like that's always a fight between cartoonists. What we do is that we gotta fight with each other between what we draw and what we write.
Yeah. Lee is in the chat and he's saying my second read through of a graphic novel takes hours. The first read only 20 minutes. And that jives with my experience as well. Like I read Sumo once all the way through and then I read through again and then I drank in all of the narrative texture in there that you put in with the color and with like the pacing moment choices and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, there are books like Goodbye Chunky Rice or, like Luis Real, which is a Chester Brown book.
Yeah.
That I look again, it's every time I look at the book, it's completely different. But not completely different, but I find something new and interesting that I didn't see before. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's the best. It's one of the better parts of this medium. We're going to get ready for book recommendations in a second. Aaron Helmrich is in the building to come in and do some book recommendations. And I got some of my own. But I want to real quick underscore one more time for everybody that this book is really, really, really good, really important. I think it should be taught in comics classes. I'm going to be using it in my comics classes. No, I'm serious. And I'm not going to spoil the ending, but I said this in the pre-show, but goosebumps, serious goosebumps when I got to that ending. And you ended it. I've talked with my students in the past about the difference between a happy ending and a satisfying ending.
Yeah.
And this has the satisfying ending.
Yeah, it's a pretty divisive ending. There are people that love that ending and there are people that hate the ending and there's people that are like, what? And you know, it's neat. I love hearing how what people think about it at all. You know, because for me, this is a really personal book. I didn't really do it for anyone. I did it for myself, and I'm happy that people like it or love it or don't like it or whatever. But it's neat. It's like I wrote a letter to everybody, and everyone reading the letter. Some of them are like, "Oh, I love this letter," and some people are like, "Oh, this letter is okay." But it's you know, I wrote it to you, and how you react to it is neat to see that reaction. And you know, I love that you know, I tell people all the time, if I never do another book ever again, you know, I'm so happy that Sumo was out there in the world, because there's no regret with Sumo. I flip through it and never look at the book and say, oh, I could have done this better, or I should do this or that. Sumo, when you look at it, is exactly how I wanted you to see it and exactly what I wanted to communicate to you, whether you like it or not, dislike it. That's everything. And I think, like, for a second, for allowing me to put that out, like, to them, into like bookstores everywhere, and to you know, make it more accessible to a lot of people. But yeah, it's like my November Rain or my Stairway to Heaven. You know, I have never known for anything else other than that. I'm excited that was out there. You know,
I think you will be remembered for it. It's a really, really good book. And again, like I said, it's very important. And I love the fact that the ending says, what I got out of the ending was, you're handing it off to me.
Yeah.
You're saying, now you go, you know, it's not important after this. You go, you do your thing. And that's where the goosebumps came from. It was really nice. While Aaron Helmrich comes in to do our book recommendations, I want to give a shout out to, you do a podcast as well. And I'm so excited to hear this, because, I'm always on the lookout for good new good shows to listen to. The Comics Claptrap. Comics with an X, claptrap.blogspot.com. Latest episode was January 3rd with Nick Abadzis, friend of the show. Love Nick Abadzis' work.
Fun to talk to. He's so different from, you know, the way he thinks about art and comics is so different from me. I'm like more like I just draw it. And you know, introspective about it, and it's fun. And I'm just like, I just draw it. I don't know. I just draw the character. And he's just like, well, you know, you got to think about it. I'm like, oh, okay. But you know, for those people that see me on shows like this, where I'm super nice, if you watch the comic, if you listen to Comics Claptrap, please prepare to know the real Tim Pham.
You know, I first met you at ALA last year, and I remember a friend of mine who knows you, a mutual friend that we have, kind of braced me for you. He's like, oh, you're tabling next to Tim Pham? All right, get ready, buddy, because he's going to come off as a lot to handle, but he's a super sweet guy. He's like the sweetest guy in the whole world, but when you first meet him, he is such a handful. And so, you know, I brace myself. I'm like, what's the deal with this guy? How abrasive is he? And I watched you and Gene Yang going at it, and it was my own personal comedy series going on next door. I think when you experience the real Tin Fam in the spirit that he is intended, it is a joy to listen to. So I'm seriously looking forward to the show.
Thank you so much.
So with that, I will say, welcome Aaron Helmrich.
Hello.
Of the Ann Arbor District Library. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. I just wanted to make note that we do have this book on order. It just has not arrived yet.
So Sumo is on order for a collection in the Ann Arbor District Library. Good to hear. We're going to do book recommendations.
Yes.
Tin, if you've got any of your own that you want to do any plugs for, feel free. But we're just going to talk about books for a few seconds, and then we're going to wrap up.
Okay. Well, this one seems apropos. It's a new one that we just got in the collection called Ichiro. I'm not positive on the pronunciation. But it's about a boy who gets his, you know, he's got a Japanese mother living in New York. His father's died from the military. He gets sent back to Japan to see his grandfather and ultimately falls into a fantasy world occupied by the realm of the gods. Mm. So it employs actually some of the color changes.
Oh, yeah. Just like, yeah.
That you were talking about before.
Different scenes have different kinds of color palettes.
And then this is the high fantasy god realm stuff here with the really full color. But it's awesome looking. It's got some really interesting art.
Really, really like kind of soft, loose brush strokes, kind of sketchy brush stroke style. But you can tell, I mean, it's like really well constructed
stuff. And another, you know.
Who put this out?
Nice journey. Who is it by? I think it's might be Uni Press, but I'm not positive.
Okay, well, we'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah. Houghton Mifflin, actually.
Houghton Mifflin.
So the big guys are putting out nicer things lately. Actually, all the books I have today are about sort of journeys. This one, Cardboard. Are you familiar with this
one? Dougton Apel's Cardboard, yeah.
Anyway, this is an awesome one about a boy who gets cardboard for his birthday. He and his dad make a man. And, you know, it starts out great. And then the neighborhood kid, the bad neighborhood kid, starts making evil things out of cardboard. And all sorts of things break loose at that point. So it's a lot of fun, you know. Love the illustrations with
them. Oh, well, yeah, Dougton Apel's illustration style is just gorgeous. He did Iron West. He's the creator of Earthworm Jim. And I think he does like 4 graphic novels a month.
Wow.
He's like one of the most prolific authors out there.
And then my last one is just another good memoir. It's called Tina's Mouth, The Existential Comic Diary. And within the book, she's constantly writing letters to Jean-Paul Sartre. It's, you know, they're calling it in the style of Persepolis and American-born Chinese, because her family is Indian, living in L.A. So this one has been getting lots of good.
So it deals with some like cultural identity kind
exactly.
of things.
Exactly, and her fitting in high school and then, you know, being hyper-intellectual and coming from a hyper-intellectual family and trying to figure that out with her other high school friends.
And the art style is kind of like this weird middle ground between, say, like, I'm trying to, like, pin it down, Lucy Nisley and Phoebe Glockner, somewhere in between those two.
Yeah, kind of remind me.
Yeah. Yep.
So, memoirs are always a lot of fun.
Yeah. And then there's one more in there?
I had one more, Cat's Cradle. I don't know if you're familiar with this one, but this is about a girl who lives in a town where evil monsters live just over the mountains, and then there's people who tame them, and she wants to get into that and ends up meeting a man with a horseless caravan who has a monster to sell. So she gets into the monster game and learns how to tame them.
Really pretty animated style art, but with like kind of a limited, kind of cooler color palette to it. I'm just describing this for the folks who are listening to just the audio after the
fact.
And
these are, you know, all brand new. They're just waiting to be processed at the library.
So they will be available at the Ann Arbor District Library, comics.aedl.org. I've got one besides Sumo, which everybody should get. I have one. I don't know how easy it is to get this. Jason Shiga's Knock Knock. You're familiar with this, right, Tin?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay.
So, go. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about what this book is about, Tin, or if you just want me to take it.
I saw the size of it and then didn't even pick it up.
So, Jason Shiga, the author of Meanwhile, he's like a cartoonist slash puzzle maker. And this book starts with a guy at your door with a gun. And then he has like an instruction sheet on page 2 and your choice. So here's you, the character, you wake up, there's a knock at the door, the guy with the gun there, and then all these items in the room are numbered and that's the page number you go to if you choose to. Do you choose to go to the window? Do you choose to go to the TV? Do you choose to open the door? And as Jason says in the book, is like most choices lead to death and disaster. In fact, you'll probably have to die several times before you fully gain a sense of your situation in life. But if you strategize and choose wisely, success will be yours. I don't know, again, how hard it is to track this book down. But if you can find it, I mean, I wish it was published through a mainstream publisher. But I picked this up at
ALA.
It's
got an interesting binding and cover, too. Like
this is hand done. So
like it's all Xerox. And hand taped. Jason does it all himself at his house. Actually, now he makes his wife do it. but you can order it through just by emailing Jason Shiga, and he'll send you one. Or if you go to any comic show, he'll have them.
So more reason to find Jason at a show. And as looks like, wait a minute. This cover is not only just screen printed, but he's
hand
got
done.
It's the doorknob is like cut and pasted on here. It's like it doesn't get much more hand done than that. This is awesome.
It takes them forever to put each one individually out. Yeah.
Wow. So, like, I mean, that goes back to the mini comics thing where it feels like the artist has, like, really handled this thing for you. Like, I saw the original bindings of the Sumo minis. They were gorgeous with that Japanese binding, but it looked really time consuming.
Yeah, I mean, I think the neat thing with doing that, being part of that community with Jason and Gene and stuff like that, is we were always trying to be better than each other. So all our mini comics were just getting increasingly crazier and crazier, you know?
Yeah.
Screen covers, hand binding. Now I'm going to tape this. Now I'm going to cut this. And you're like, ugh.
We all should say that. Did you have any book recommendations that you wanted to throw at us, Tin?
Well, you know, I've reverted. I'm just now really into Marvel comics right now. And I just want to throw out that I really am enjoying this Hawkeye series.
Really?
Fraction and drawn by David Aja. And I really am enjoying Uncanny X-Men, part of the Marvel Now thing. I know it's kind of weird because I was so into indies for a long time, and now all I want to do is read like Wolverine and stuff. So I've been enjoying those two series.
That's cool. So what's so good about Uncanny X-Men? Because, I mean, as a guy who's been out of the superhero loop for a long time, it's like I think, oh gosh, I don't want to have to go back to grad school in X-Men history to be able to read this book again.
Well, they restarted one of their many times as they restarted. But I'm a huge fan. I think is one of the best because he doesn't draw superheroes the way everyone draws superheroes. He has a very like indie comic aesthetic, but somehow he like snuck into the superhero world, you know. So I really enjoy his art.
Oh, cool. All right, I'll have to take a look at it. And then the other thing I wanted to throw a plug out to is there's videos of you. If anybody is saying at the end of this, like, man, I need more Tin in my life, besides the podcast, you've got a series of videos on KQED on their channel, right? And there's like some how to draw comics videos. There's a video on Sumo. There's a handful of videos on there that are they're pretty substantially long, so long as far as YouTube goes. So we'll link to that in the show notes as well if folks want to hear more from you. But where else should people find you? Where else should they go to find you, Tin?
Well, you know, if you want to follow that comic that I'm doing, it's called PleaseDon'tGiveUp.com, and I'm going to start posting that on Monday. But that's pretty much it. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Cobra Talon. If you want to be my friend on Facebook, you know, send me a request. You know, the KQED thing is neat because growing up, it's a public television channel. Growing up, I was always really influenced by this one show called Commander Mark Draw Squad.
Yeah, he's been on the show. He's been on Comics Are Great in the past. That was awesome. I taught him how to use Twitter.
Sorry, I got excited. I love that show, and it made me want to draw. And so I was trying to pitch KQED that I could be the new Commander Mark with Commander Tin. And I've been trying to do that forever. And then they finally like kind of threw me a bone, and they were like, try this first, and then maybe. And so that's why KQED got on there. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So cool. But yes, I nominate you. I think that you carry on the spirit in a fresh 21st century way.
Yeah. Well, before we leave the show, I want to say draw.
I got to hear him say it to me personally. That was like one of the highlights of my career. I know. And your microphone's cutting because you're so loud as you're freaking out about this, Tin. It was great. It was really great. I'll send you a link to the episode. But anyway, yes, Tin, thank you so much for making time to be on the show today. It was really fun talking with you.
Thank you. And I'm super impressed that your library has so many awesome graphic novels. That all libraries do that as well. So keep up the good job. Thank you, you guys.
Yeah. So, okay. So, Aaron Helmrich, thank you.
Thanks
for showing up and doing the great book recommendations. Thanks to Matt Dubay and Tom Smith, Eric Kloster, and Al. Oh my gosh, Al, I'm going to just trounce all of your names. I'm going to say Al. Al did a really awesome job helping to do the technical producing of the show. The show will be archived at comicsgreat.com/CAG74. And it will be at comics.aadl.org. You can follow Tin Pham at Cobra Talon on Twitter. Aaron Helmrich, you are
Gory Girl
on Twitter. If people want to follow her and harass her about books that should be
there, you go. Please do.
as the selector of graphic novels at the library. Until next time, everybody. I have been Jersey Droz of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on Twitter. Okay, bye.